Welcome to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Now get ready for another episode of Shades of the Afterlife with Sandra Champlain.
Welcome to our podcast. Please be aware the thoughts and opinions expressed by the host are their thoughts and opinions only and do not reflect those of iHeartMedia, iHeartRadio, Coast to Coast AM, employees of Premier Networks, or their sponsors and associates. We would like to encourage you to do your own research and discover the subject matter for yourself. Hi, I'm Sandra Champlain. For almost 25 years, I've been on a journey to prove the existence of life after death. On each episode, we'll discuss the reasons we now know that our loved ones have survived physical death. And so will we. Welcome to Shades of the Afterlife. So I don't know why this is, but we often think of people who believe in the afterlife as wearing long flowing gowns, gypsies, fortune tellers, and some of the new age weirdos, can I say? And I feel very strongly about dispelling that because it's just not true. There's some mainstream people who believe in the afterlife just as much as anyone. So I want to introduce you today to Suzanne Giesemann, who is a retired U.S. Navy commander. She's the author of 11 books. She's an inspirational speaker and an evidence-based medium. She has been recognized by Dr. Wayne Dyer and afterlife researcher Dr. Gary Schwartz. While she was in the U.S. Navy, Suzanne served as a commanding officer, as a special assistant to the Chief of Naval Operations, and as an aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff on 9/11. In addition to earning the Defense Distinguished Service Medal, she has a master's degree in national security affairs and taught political science at the U.S. Naval Academy. Suzanne, welcome.
Thanks, Sandra. Great to be here.
Oh, great to have you. I spent the morning looking at your website and I'm thinking, oh, you're just a gold mine in a good way. When you can read and watch the short film that you have on your website and get filled with goosebumps,
yes.
I know it'll be a good conversation.
Excellent.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, if we can just start off just finding out a little bit about you. I mean, how does a gal end up being a U.S. Naval commander and then turn into a medium? I mean, that's quite a jump.
Yeah, you were reading that bio, and I wanted to sit up straight in my chair and salute you. I just went right back into the Navy mode there.
Of course.
It's very much a part of me. And people that see me, I stand up straight, you know, and I can go into commander mode if I need to.
Yes.
But I've swung the other way now from left brain to right brain. And then when I work now as a medium, try to balance the two, and it's working out pretty well. But to answer your question, unfortunately, like many people who have a spiritual awakening or a big transition in their life, mine came about after the death of my stepdaughter. That was a huge wake-up call for me. Yeah.
When was that if I may ask?
That was 10 years ago already. God, time flies so fast, but so much has changed in those 10 years. And the beautiful part is just like your title, We Don't Die. That's what I learned from Susan's passing, because I didn't know that when she passed. I didn't have any idea there was an afterlife when I was in the Navy on 9/11, when so many people in the building where I worked in the Pentagon, so many were killed and flying over the World Trade Center on the last plane in the airspace on that day, looking down on that, thinking, you know, why are some people in the wrong place at the wrong time? I had no idea at that point that we don't die. But as a result of 9/11 and Susan's death, I know that that is the greatest truth of all, that changes lives when we realize that.
After Susan passed, was that when you just started looking for answers, and how did you begin that journey?
Well, it was 9/11 that started me asking for the answers, because I was really up close and personal there. And I took the traditional path of turning to organized religion, and because I had been raised with no religion, and it just didn't resonate with me. And so I put my searching to the side. And as I tell people, the universe has a way of making sure we learn the lessons we came here to learn. And there are many paths to get to truth. and the truth being that we don't die. And so then when Susan passed, that's when I remember looking down at her body in the coffin and saying, that's not Susan. That's right. Not Susan. So if it's not, then who is she? Who are we? And where is this spirit that enlivened that body? It has to still survive. So I took my husband, a retired Navy destroyer captain, to a medium.
Ah.
And that session, that just changed our life because, thank you, God, we were led to an evidence-based medium who brought through irrefutable evidence that our Susan was right there in the room with us. I remember it took me at least 3 days to process that. I walked around in a daze thinking, wait a minute, you mean she really is still with us? That's what I wanted to know, but she really is. It was life-changing.
Yeah. Can you give us an
example?
And
now you and I do that for other people.
Oh, I know. Can you give us an example of one of those moments that just, because I know for myself too, when I first heard things that like there's no other way any human being can know this unless life after death is true.
Well, being the skeptic that I was and wanting to ensure that my husband also knew this was real, if it was real, mm-hmm. I didn't give the medium our last name. So I knew she couldn't Google the tribute that we had to Susan online. So she knew nothing about our loss. And she brought through a young woman who died in her 20s, who showed up in a brown uniform. Susan was a Marine, a sergeant in the Marines, killed on active duty. And Susan was struck by lightning. That's how she died. And the medium said, I suddenly have the headache of Zeus and Athena. And Zeus is the god with lightning bolts. And she said, I have this electrical tingly feeling all over me. Now, there's several pieces of evidence right there, but I would think one of the most stunning pieces, besides young woman, 20s, brown uniform, was when she said, this young woman is bringing with her a little baby boy who she wants to introduce to you, but he's hanging back shyly as if he doesn't know you. Well, that medium had no way of knowing that when Susan was struck by lightning, she was 6 months pregnant with a little boy.
Oh.
Whew. So, I mean, what is the other? There's no other explanation for that.
No.
And Susan has been around ever since and helping me in this work now and kicking me in the butt sometimes because that's the way she is. And it's a blessing.
So from there, Suzanne, there's a big jump from going to a medium and becoming one.
Yes, you're right. So I had always had a fascination with metaphysics and the afterlife and even reading about mediums, but I never had a reason to go to one. And I was already a published author at the time we went to that medium. And now I knew I had to share with people that this is real, that mediumship is not woo-woo stuff. This is real and it'll change your life. So I ended up writing two biographies of respected mediums. And in doing so, attended the class of one of them. And sitting in the classroom, I learned how mediums work. That medium called me to the front of the room and said, by the way, you can do this too, and put me on the spot. And standing there before a group of other people, she said, there's a spirit standing here. What do you sense? Not only did I sense a male, but that he died of cancer. He was an engineer. He had a full head of hair. And oh, by the way, he gave me the name Twinkle Toes. It was his nickname. If you could have knocked me over with a feather. Where did that come from? How did I know that?
Right.
Because he was standing right there. It's because I had been meditating for 2 years at that point. The day Susan died, I said, if she's still alive, I want to know it, and started meditating. Little did I know that was a training ground for me to still my mind. So in that moment when the teacher said, there's a spirit standing here, what do you sense? When I shut my eyes, I knew how to quiet my mind. It just went blank. And that man was able to impress himself upon me. It was beautiful.
Mm, and also a good reason for all of us to continue quieting the mind. And it's a hard thing to practice.
Oh, yeah.
But I tell you, there's so many miraculous things that happen in that mode when we can still that mind. Wow.
Yeah, so my teacher Janet Milhavik, had studied at the Arthur Findlay College of Psychic Sciences in England.
I've heard of it.
Where I know you've been.
Yeah.
And I said to her, look, I don't want to just take this halfway. I want to go all the way. I want to study with some of the best evidence-based mediums in the world. I'm going there. And that's where you really put your money where your mouth is, put the time and put yourself on the line. And I went over there with the goal. I want to feel these spirits. I want to know they're really here. I want to see them. All of that happened. It changed my life. I came home from there just whispering, crying out the words, I am a medium. It was just, you know, it's like the last thing I ever expected. But I came home from there with having had such good experiences, bringing through evidence that I started practicing on family and friends and getting incredible evidence, so much so that they started referring to family and friends and the referrals, and to the point now where I finally had to stop taking referrals because I have over 300 people waiting for readings with me. I get it down to a reasonable amount, then I open the waiting list again. But it's the evidence that changes lives.
That's
and I'm
beautiful.
So grateful.
Oh, I'm
so grateful.
I'm grateful. And yeah, what I experienced at Arthur Findlay College as well was just mind-blowing and wonderful.
Yeah.
So now there's the jump from medium to great medium, because have a waiting list that long.
it's great. I give all credit to spirit, let me tell
of
you,
course.
Because if it weren't for that connection, we don't do this in a vacuum. It's a team effort, total team effort. They work really hard to get through this.
Now, herein lies the problem. You have 300 people waiting for you. You can't get to everybody, but you can get to them by some of the things you do. So if you don't mind, maybe talking a little bit about, let's see, which book? You've got some good ones. I know you've got a...
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you've got Messages of Hope. Start there.
Messages of Hope was the story of how I went from Navy officer, and it tells about 9/11 to the story we just told. There's a lot of examples of the evidence that convinced me this is real, and the evidence in those initial readings. And that evidence is life. Get that book for people who have just had a loss and they find it so comforting. So the message is clear. This life is not the end, and your loved ones are still with you. And as I say all the time, talk to them. They hear you. So yeah, Messages of Hope is one of several with that message.
Yeah. And I often believe too that you don't have to go to a medium to get a message from your loved one or to even talk to them. You have a book that you've co-written with Gary Schwartz, Sonia Rinaldi, oh my gosh, Victor Zamet, Suzanne Wilson, all these great people that I know, called Afterlife Communication, 16 Proven Methods, 85 True Accounts. Is there some things we can do to connect on our own that you would
recommend? Definitely. That meditation is the first key.
Much more after the break. You're listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Shades of the Afterlife coming right up.
Younger looks in minutes? It's real with Instantly Ageless from HealthyLooking.com. This velvety micro cream applied to areas on the face immediately diminishes visible signs of aging. Great for bags under the eyes, forehead wrinkles, saggy eyebrows, crow's feet, and facial pores. Now look your beautiful best in less than 2 minutes with Instantly Ageless. And it works great for women and men. Here's what happened when they tried Instantly Ageless on the doctors.
But I want you all to imagine a cream that can instantly remove your under eye bags. We're going to put it to the test with our good friend, Dr. Sonia Batra. So what is this product?
So this is a product we're going to see if it works. It's called Instantly Ageless. And the idea is that it works very quickly. Is you just need a very small amount and then you apply it to areas where you might be a little bit puffy. I have just looked at what's in this product and I've looked at the ingredients. And one of them is something called argireline, which is sort of a darling in dermatology right now. It's a peptide or a protein that actually relaxes the muscle. It's also called Botox in a bottle. It's meant to relax muscle and work like Botox.
I mean, you can literally see it working as you're putting it on.
The other active ingredient in this is silicates, which are almost act like a clay. They're minerals, and they're making the skin sort of tighter. It's actually increasing the surface tension on the skin to push that herniated fat pad back.
Order yours today at HealthyLooking.com or by phone at 800-604-3129. 800-604-3129. Our starter kit is only $19.99, including shipping. And the full-size box has now been discounted substantially as well. Put your best face forward instantly with Instantly Ageless from HealthyLooking.com. That's HealthyLooking.com.
And now more Sandra on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Shades of the Afterlife. I'm Sandra Champlain, and we are here with Suzanne Giesman, retired U.S. Navy commander, now medium and teacher. Suzanne, you were just saying that meditating, quieting the mind, is one of the first ways we can get in touch with our loved ones.
Quieting the mind, sitting quietly with the intention of connecting. And, you know, I want to get away from calling it meditation, too, because it's, as you know, having studied it at Arthur Findlay College, there's another term that I find more empowering, and that is sitting in the power.
I love that.
And we do that when we sit quietly. And I have a new method that I'm teaching now in my courses and in my online courses called the Bless Me Method. You know, military people like acronyms. So I said to myself, when I sit in the power, what is it that I do to connect with spirit? And this is going to be the real abbreviated version because I am in the process of writing a whole book about this. But it's seven steps. First, the bless me. Then B is focus on the breathing to relax. And then lift your consciousness. That's the L. In any number of ways, thinking things you're grateful for, focusing on the heart. And then the E is expand your consciousness. Lots of visualizations for doing that. And then the S and S in bless me is surrender your focus on this reality, the human reality, and then shift. That's the second S. Shift your awareness to that part where we're all one, to the level of the soul. And then M-E and merge your consciousness with your loved ones who have passed. You do it with intent. You do it with belief that it's possible. And then the E is just experience what happens. So it's breathe, lift, expand, surrender and shift, merge and experience. This is the rapid version, but I'm all kinds of videos that I'm going to be putting out in the future and doing webinars on this. Lots of tools to just know that that other level is there where our loved ones are. You're there now as a soul, but you may not know it till you surrender and shift your focus.
Mm-hmm. And it's easy to forget or not even be aware of the way that we can connect with other people is we are souls and we just happen to have a human body. So it's not crazy to think that we can do this ourselves.
We all do it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You read somebody when they walk in the room, you're reading their energy. You either resonate with someone or there's a little dissonance there. You know who's calling on the phone before it even rings. You read your partner's thoughts because your energy fields intermingle so often. You're just merged without even knowing it. That's the soul, the energy aspect of us.
I love the blessed method. Can you talk a little bit about the film?
That was a blessing in itself. I mean, my goal is help me reach as many people as possible with this message that we don't die. And I gave a reading to a woman who didn't even know what mediumship was. Somebody just said, hey, you're stuck in your grief. Go see this woman, Suzanne Giesman. So she sat with me and her husband on the other side came through so clearly. And it was life-changing for her. Well, it turns out her son is a filmmaker. And she said, I think he needs to do a film about this woman who had this incredible transition from Navy commander and aide to the chairman to now a medium. And so he did this wonderful documentary, really truthful. There was no need to sensationalize it at all. And it has played at least 8 film festivals and done very well because it goes straight to the heart. So I'm very proud of that documentary.
Yeah, as you should be.
Message of the Hope.
Would you mind sharing what your website is? Because there's also a link on your website to watch the film, correct?
Yeah. It's SuzanneGiesman.com, but that's a little hard to spell. So you can also get there by typing in loveatthecenter.com.
Loveatthecenter.com.
That's the second blessing that comes from doing this work is the transformation that happens when you tap into who we are. It's amazing. Life-changing.
We thank Suzanne for being here, and now we're going to stick with the U.S. Navy and meet Chief Petty Officer Tony Woody, who has a career of 22 years with honorable service. He was a P-3 Orion aircraft flight engineer for over 20 years. What happened to him? Well, his pilot botched an engine-out emergency landing, and the plane suddenly departed the runway at over 150 miles per hour and narrowly missed slamming into an emergency response vehicle. This caused Chief Petty Officer Woody to suddenly have a profound out-of-body experience. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you, Sandra. It's very much a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to working with you.
Let's hear a little bit about you. How did you end up getting involved with the Navy to begin with? You grew up in Texas.
Yeah, small town in East Texas, really small. I mean, I had the same first grade teacher my dad did, and I was the second to the youngest of six kids, so that should tell you something.
Yes.
And my dad was in World War II and when he was in the service when he was younger. And so not a whole lot of opportunities in East Texas where I grew up when you graduate high school, couldn't afford to go to college at the time. So I followed my dad's footsteps and joined the Navy. Back then, they had a commercial on television that said, the Navy, it's not just a job, it's an adventure. Man, that was a gross understatement, I have to say. And so I joined the Navy, went through boot camp and did a little training. I was going to be an engine mechanic originally, aviation machinist mate, so is what that is called. But a jet engine mechanic. And when I got to my first command, I got sent to a P-3 Orion squadron in Jacksonville, Florida. And at 18 years old, when you first get to your first command as a junior enlisted, they put you in what's called the first lieutenant division, where you do these, you know, the jobs nobody else wants to do.
Right.
And so I was at that time put in the squadron snack bar. Each command had their own little snack bar, and I was running the register. And the commanding officer came in there. I'd never met him. He was in his flight suit. And I asked him what it was like to go flying one of those big old birds. And he said, come with me, son, and I'll show you. And that very day, he hooked me up with a flight engineer. I followed him around for a couple hours as he showed me what he did on a pre-flight. And then I'm in the flight station at the approach into the runway after we've started the engines and everything. And we're waiting we've taxied and we're waiting to take the runway. We're waiting for another airplane to land. We had a bit of a wait. And the skipper turned to the engineer and said, what do you think? Should we put him in there? He goes, yeah. Next thing I know, the engineer gets out of his seat and they tell me to get in the chair. And
wow.
I'm pushing power levers now all of a sudden.
Wow. 18 years old.
Yeah. And 2 hours earlier, I was selling hot dogs. You know, so where else can you do that? And we get in the air after the takeoff. The engineer is standing up behind me doing all the checklist stuff because I'm a know-nothing nugget at that point. And after they get done with the climb checklist, the skipper smacks me on my knee and says, by the way, son, you know you can do that job. And he knew what he was doing. He saw a young kid with an interest. He set the hook and reeled me in. And that was all I wanted to do. And so I worked at it really hard. After I got done with First Lieutenant Division, I went straight into the flight engineer shop and started on-the-job training as a flight engineer. And by the time I was 21 years old, I had earned my wings and was the youngest man in the history of the P-3 Navy community, which has been around since 1962, to earn my wings as a flight engineer on a P-3 Orion aircraft. And that started my career.
Wow, really incredible. What does an engineer do? Because I know there's different seats up there in the cockpit, right?
We called it the center seat because it's one of the, I think it's the only airplane with a flight engineer where the engineer doesn't sit off to the side in the back. You actually sit facing forward right between the pilot mm-hmm. and the pilot. And so on takeoff, I would bend forward and I was the one that set power on takeoff. It's also the only plane with a flight engineer where the engineer handles the power levers. So it was very exciting for that first day. And I just kept at it and loved it. And I was tailor-made for that job. Ironically, though, when I was about 10 years old, I'd never been around airplanes. I'd never seen an airplane up close, even a small one. And we went to an airbase one day or near Dallas area when I was a kid. And I saw it was a large aircraft, mm-hmm. an airplane, and I just fell in love with it. And I told my dad that day that one day I was going to fly in a plane like that. I knew at that moment at 10 years old, I just knew it. And 8 years later, that's what I was doing.
Wow. My dad worked at a little airport when he was 16, and he ended up going into the Air Force, and plenty of stories from him, and went off to being captain with American Airlines. And, you know, I'd always hear the stories of him flying, whether whatever seat he was in the cockpit. You know, I'd hear the stories of, and he eventually made captain. And, yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got his stories, too. There's an aviation, there's a, aviators will tell you the definition of aviation is hours and hours and hours of boredom interspersed with moments of start. Terror.
Yes. Yes. No question.
Along in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's all great. And before I forget, thank you for your service and your commitment to our country. It takes a lot. And I know I speak for all of us.
Dollars to have all that fun.
Yeah. But I speak for all of us for, you know, protecting our country and doing all of that. So where does the story go on to? Because I know that you've had some incredible experiences in your career.
Well, I was in Florida when I started out. And mm-hmm. So by the time I left Jacksonville, Florida, my next set of orders, this was about 6 years into it, almost 5.5 years. And I already had, I don't know, probably 2,000 hours flight experience by then. I transferred to Barbers Point Naval Air Station, Hawaii. Got there in 1981. And then in 1982, every even year number, they have the RIMPAC military exercises. Rim of the Pacific is what it's called. Mm-hmm. It's the largest military exercise on the planet that involves numerous different countries. And so it was my crew's turn to go flying on one of the missions. And we'd go out for 12, 13-hour flight. So we took off and we're fully loaded. Now, this is a 70-ton airplane. So it carries 62,000 pounds of fuel. So we took off, started the climb out, got to about 10,000 feet, had an engine malfunction on number one, and we had to shut it down. And you can't dump all the fuel, so we dumped what we could. And then we had to fly around till we got to max allowable land weight because you don't want to land too heavy for fear of damaging the structural integrity. Mm-hmm. And we came back in to land, and we did the emergency brief and declared an emergency and all that. And when you do that, they literally put the emergency response vehicles, big fire trucks really is what they are, on each side of the runway. You have two at a certain place, two more further down, and two more further down. And as you go past them on landing, they pull in behind you and chase you. So they're right there in case anything goes wrong. That's typically a good thing. But that day it wasn't. And fortunately, we landed on, it was parallel runways. The heading was 040, and we landed on the left runway. Had we landed on the right one, I would not be here talking to you today.
Tony, I think this is a good time to take our break. And when we come back, we'll let you finish the story. You're listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Dr. Nathan Newman, doctor to top athletes and celebrities, plus creator of stem cell-based Lumines, is proud to announce a much lower price on his products, so more can enjoy a more youthful look. Lumines is great for women and men on those fine lines, wrinkles, under eye bags, plus great on the neck, forehead, and hands. Dr. Newman, what causes the skin to break down with age?
Changes that we start to look on our skin starts actually in our 20s, where we get sun damage and the effects of pollution and our environment start to cause our skin to age, and we start to break down the collagen, the elastin, and we get glycation, which is the sugar that we eat, gets stuck within the collagen fibers and makes our skin inflexible. The Lumines skincare line does two things. One, it has a reparative effect, so it makes the skin look and feel much better, softer, supple, and more young and smooth, but it also is preventative. So it prevents the skin from the breakdown and the damage that we get from the sun and from the environment and from sugars that we have in our body.
Thank you, Dr. Newman. For several years, we have offered Lumines products and decided a price reduction was in order, so more can enjoy the amazing benefits of Dr. Newman's stem cell-based Lumines. Shop now at healthylooking.com or call toll-free 800-604-3129. If you would like to try Lumines, how about our starter kit, postage paid for $19.99? See the full line of products from Lumines, plus our starter kit offer at healthylooking.com. That's healthylooking.com or call 800-604-3129. Lumines from healthylooking.com.
Hey, it's time to head over to coasttocoastam.com and check out the Art Bell Vault, a collection of timeless audio. Listen to some of the great interviews with the likes of the late Father Malachi Martin, Dr. Evelyn Paglini, investigative journalist Jim Mars, and more. This is classic audio that you can enjoy at any time, and it's all heard without interruption. New shows are added each week, so find out how to access the Art Bell Vault now by going to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com.
Did you know that tests that could save your life from cancer are now available for little or no cost, thanks to the healthcare law called the Affordable Care Act? Let this be the year you get screening tests that can help detect cancer early when it's most treatable. Don't let concerns get in your way. Talk to a doctor or other medical professional to learn more about the best cancer testing options for you.
Welcome back to Shades of the Afterlife. I'm Sandra Champlain, and we are with U.S. Navy's Chief Petty Officer, Tony Woody. Now, Tony, you were just talking about coming in with the emergency landing.
When we came in and landed, we have to go a lot faster because we're heavy. And instead of landing with the normal fuel load of about 8,000 pounds left on top of your airfield when we get done with a mission, we still had 42,000 pounds of fuel on board. So you have to fly a lot faster to keep the plane in the air.
Right.
So at those speeds, things go wrong in a hurry. So we landed at about 135 knots, which is around just over 155 miles an hour. And main mounts touched the ground. Everything seemed okay. The nose gear came down and we started a swerve to the right. And we briefed that. You expect a swerve to the right because you have two engines on that side giving you reverse thrust with one on the other side. But the pilot put in incorrect rudder for some reason, thinking he was putting in proper correction. And then he jams in more because it kept swerving to the right. And the next thing we know, all of a sudden, we're headed directly at one of the fire trucks that's sitting on the side of the runway. And all of a sudden had death coming at me at over 150 miles an hour. And there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. It was the most helpless, hopeless feeling I've ever felt. And I had a 3-year-old son at the time. And all I could think about in those last few seconds was that I was never going to see my son again or hold my son again or see my family. And we came so close to that fire truck that the right wingtip went over the top of the fire truck. And I could see the guy on the top of the fire truck with the water cannon. He's in his silver fire suit. I couldn't hear him, but I could see him screaming at the top of his lungs in terror, because he probably thought he was dead too. Just
sure.
Like, it's not you think you're gonna die, you know it, it's coming, you know it, and I'm dead, there's nothing I can do, here it comes. And all of a sudden I found myself out of the airplane, literally up above and to the right of the airplane, and I'm still seeing the perspective from my flight engineer seat too. I'm in two places at once. And I'm very confused. I don't understand what's going on. But the me that was out of the airplane, I call it fractured consciousness. I don't know what else to call it. The part of me that was outside the airplane could see the propellers spinning and everything was in super slow motion. It was like a time distortion thing. And I literally watched the propeller, which is 13 feet from tip to tip, weighs 2,200 pounds, spins at 1,020 rounds a minute, and is moving forward at 150 plus miles an hour. I watched it gap the front left corner of the fire truck. As the blades were spinning, it went over the fire truck, but it gapped it and went past it. So a split second, one way or the other, that propeller would have slammed into that fire truck. It was literally like, I bet you couldn't have gotten a piece of paper between those, the fire truck and the propeller blade when it went through.
Wow.
Yeah. And that really was amazing to see that from that perspective. And then the plane is now leaving the runway at about 35 degree angle across the asphalt between the runways, and it's throwing up all this dust and debris. And all of us, I started seeing that. And then the next thing I know, my consciousness is fracturing into to where all these other, anything that was floating in the air, any piece of debris, didn't matter what it was, I was in that location too. All these perspectives, as all the debris flying around, I'm flying around with each one of them. You would think it would seem very chaotic, but it had this feeling of sublime perfection where I knew every piece of debris was exactly where it was supposed to be doing what it was supposed to be doing, when it was supposed to be doing it. And there was this absolute calm effect going on, which I didn't know if I was dead. I didn't know what was going on. I was just totally confused, trying to understand what was happening to me. And I still had the perspective of me being in the flight engineer seat as well. And we ended up going all the way across the asphalt between the two runways. I could see the fire trucks chasing us. All of that, it was just totally strange. We finally came to a stop half on, half off the other runway. We literally went all the way across to the other runway, runway 4 right. And by the time we realized the plane was okay, fire trucks caught up to us. And we ended up adding power and finishing the rollout on another runway. So I literally did a 3-engine emergency landing in a 4-engine heavyweight aircraft and did one approach and one landing and used two entirely different runways to do that with. So I didn't know what to say or anything. I looked at the co-pilot. I watched him when he came off his adrenaline rush, and he looks at me and I look at him and I'm like, did you see that? He said, hell yeah. But I don't think he understood what I was really talking about.
Right.
And I didn't know how to express it at the time. And it was just, did my job at that point. I didn't know what else to do, but it confused me. So I didn't say anything to anybody that day. The next day, they wouldn't do this these days, but the next day we did a refly, and the commanding officer took the pilot and myself back out to shoot touch and goes. And I started having post-traumatic stress on the first approach. Didn't even think about it might affect me that way. I had no, that term wasn't even developed yet. Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
Didn't even exist back then. You know, back then they put you back on the horse and see if you could ride. So I bent forward because I didn't want the skipper to see my face, and I couldn't look outside on the first few approaches. And I had to, because of the terror that I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. So I got through that day, and that flight, after several landings, I finally had convinced myself I could do the job. And it's probably the only time that I'll ever run off the runway and get your head back in the game. But I knew if the commanding officer saw my face, he'd realize I wasn't able to do that job at that point. But I got through it. And then on Wednesday, that happened on a Monday, the incident did, the original aircraft incident. The refly happened on a Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, there was this television show. I know this kind of sounds unrelated, but for some reason, something happened on that Monday that opened a gateway somehow. Okay. I don't understand it. I went to bed that night after my wife and I had watched the television show that came on back then called That's Incredible. And they had this man on there named Leslie Lemke, L-E-M-K-E. I think you can still look him up on YouTube. So I'm not going to go into any details about his story, but what I felt was I was seeing my first miracle. And I now understand everything's a miracle. I didn't understand that at 24 years old. But I went to bed that night and said just a simple prayer, genuine gratitude, really. Short prayer, I'll never forget it. Just thanking God for allowing me to see my first miracle. And then I added the words, and it'd be nice if you could do something like that for me someday. And you make that statement in your head, and you don't really expect anything, you know, of
right.
it.
Right. Just,
right. Why would you? But that's what I said in my head, and I never forgot that, and went to sleep. And then sometime in the middle of the night, used to call dark 30 in the military. I don't know, 3:30 or so, or 4 in the morning. I don't know what it was, but it was still very dark and very early. There was this instantaneous shift in location of my consciousness. I didn't go through a tunnel. I didn't physically get injured or physically die, but all of a sudden I'm in this black void and I'm seeing this absolutely beautiful golden white liquid molten crystalline white light that was pouring out energy in all directions of just profound, unconditional love. And I instantly knew I was in the presence of my creator. You can't not know, because the energy from, I call it the heart of God, was pouring right through me, expressing to me on a extremely intimate level what God felt about me as an individual and as one of God's children. That's the way I view it now. I was being flooded with profound, unconditional love on a cosmic scale that cannot be expressed in human words.
Wow.
And I said three words in just sheer dumbfounded awe of my what I was seeing, feeling, and experiencing. I said, "Oh my goodness." And the instant I said the word goodness, the essence of goodness on a cosmic scale poured through me. And I could feel the difference between goodness and love. And the love was by far the most powerful. I was one with the infinite power too. I felt it. It was this unbelievably infinite feeling of infinite power that was under absolute perfect control. And it was equally as powerful as it was also equally benevolent on the same level. And I knew, anybody will know, that if that being didn't want you to exist anymore, you would be wiped out in an instant. But I also knew how precious I was, this individual, this being of light, this creator I call my God, was expressing to me with energy how deeply loved I am unconditionally. And by the way, I grew up in East Texas, Southern Baptist, fundamentalist perspective. And so after that happened to me, I had to change my whole way of thinking, because mm-hmm. that did fit with what I experienced. And I'm an engineer, so I kind of need all the details to fit, you know?
Right.
So the love was there. The power was immense. It was under absolute complete control and perfect control. I was in a place of perfection, and I knew it. I mean, you just feel it. The whole environment itself is like air dominates this area here, mm-hmm. yeah. Earth. Well, imagine the air doesn't just dominate your outside of you. It dominates your very cells and energy in you. So there's this immutable spiritual law that I call it on the other side that prevents any negative expression of any kind from being expressed while in the presence of that being. That's how it works there. I don't know how that can happen, but God, that's why God's God and I'm not.
Right.
So I said the three words, "Oh my goodness." And then the goodness blasted through me. Joy came next, bliss, peace, ecstasy. I was home and I knew it. I was finally home. And I had this, I call it the urge to merge. You have this instinctive deep desire to go deeper into the light. That's all you care about. I was attracted to that light just like a moth to a flame. You can't mm-hmm. do that. And the next thing I realized, I saw through the peripheral vision, I could see the backs of a pair of hands.
We need to take a quick break, and Tony, when we get back, we want to find out who's at the end of these hands. You're listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Stay right there. There's more Sandra coming right up.
At ParanormalDate.com, you meet the most fantastic people.
Hi, I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. What brings you here?
Yeah, I'm here to meet someone who understands me.
How so?
Well, I'm into UFOs, ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, conspiracy theories, the paranormal, that kind of stuff. But can't seem to find anyone who gets it.
Oh, well, nice to meet you, Tom. I gotta go.
Okay, guess that's not your cup of tea. You sure?
Very. Good luck with that.
I can't meet anyone when I'm out, and I really can't find a website for my unique interests. What is one to do?
Have you thought about ParanormalDate.com?
Para what dot what? Who are you?
I'm a paranormal matchmaker, and it's ParanormalDate.com. It's a website for people looking for people like them. Stuff you like, remember?
Interesting. I'll give it a try.
Well, let's try this again.
Hi, I'm Tom.
Hey, I'm Deb. Your profile on Paranormal
Travel.com looked very interesting. So you really saw a UFO?
Well, yeah. It was so intense, but not as intense as meeting you.
You're an alien chasing flirt, but I kind of like it.
Wow. This ParanormalDate.com thing really works.
Maybe ParanormalDate.com is for you. People with an interest in things they hear on George's show find their match daily. So if you're looking for that special someone with an interest in UFOs, ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, conspiracy theories, and of course, the paranormal, come to the dating site inspired by George Norrie. It's always free to search, and if you decide to upgrade to our amazing new features, use promo code George for a great discount. ParanormalDate.com. You are not alone.
And now back to Sandra Champlain and Shades of the Afterlife.
Welcome back to Shades of the Afterlife. I'm Sandra Champlain, and we are with U.S. Navy Chief Petty Officer Tony Woody. And Tony, you were describing this, what seems like a near-death experience, but it happened after your close call in the aircraft, and now you are lying in your bedroom having this wild experience. So you were talking about the hands.
Kind of curious, what are these hands doing there? And then the rest of the bedroom started coming in, my bedroom that I was in, started coming into view peripherally. That's when I realized that those were my hands that were up in the air. I had sat up in bed and I had my hands up, and then I could see the rest of the room come back in. And at the foot of the bed across the room, there was no wall anymore. And the room was lit up like a billion stars. And I realized I had sat up in bed and I was looking at my hands. And I think God did this for a reason, because he knew I'm an engineer. And if I had not happened this way, I would have simply written this off as some sort of an exotic dream later.
Yes.
But I couldn't do that because of the way it happened. So I'm now sitting up in bed. I've got tears going down my face and my hands are up in the air, and I could see my wife's feet through my peripheral vision, and I could tell that her back was to me. And I'm thinking, how can she sleep through all this? You know, it's like a billion stars in the bedroom and all this energy, and the wall is gone at the end of the room. And I literally had God in my bedroom, and I couldn't understand how she could sleep through all of this. And then I went, oh, I'm really awake. This is really happening to me. At the moment God realized that I flat out knew I wasn't dreaming and I was awake, the whole, it was about a 10-foot circle of the wall and ceiling in my bedroom at the foot of the bed across the room was the light. And it all shrunk down, not instantly, but just over about a second or two, shrunk down to the center and went away. And I'll never forget how that felt, because I just had the greatest love I will ever know ripped away from me. And I just sat there the rest of the night staring at the wall, because there was this residual spiritual energy still fluctuating through the wall, or in the wall. And I just kept praying and asking that the light, hoping the light would come back, until the sun gradually started coming up. And as that happened, as the room got brighter, the energy faded away in the wall. And then my wife woke up and she says, what's wrong with you? And I had no idea how to explain any of that. And the following Sunday, I went to the church looking for help, because I didn't know what to do with that. I needed an answer.
Sure.
I needed a lot of answers, and I had no understanding of what happened to me or how that could happen or what am I supposed to do with it. At that point, I wasn't even considering what that meant as far as who and what I am. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what to do next. And I went to a church in Waianae where we had been going to. They had a guest pastor there that day, and he looked at me kind of oddly. And after I expressed it to him, I was able to get it out. But every time I brought it up for the first few years, I'd start crying because it was just so overwhelming. But I was able to express to him the story and what happened. And he turned his, kind of tilted his head and looked at me a little oddly, and then turned his back on me and walked away and never said a word. And so I kind of got angry after that because I felt like I got kicked out of heaven with no answers, because there were no words spoken to me when I was in the light. Mm-hmm. Just all energy from God expressing to me how deeply precious I am and important as an individual. And it's the same for everybody. I'm not claiming any special status here or anything at all. I knew that love and that depth of love was for everyone, not just me. But God makes you feel so personally important and precious. And so my best analogy, what the love felt like, is this. After over 35 years of thinking about it, and believe me, there's not a day that went by that I haven't thought about it since it happened. But the love felt like I was that precious to God because I was going to be the last newborn baby at the end of the history of the life of the entire universe. And I was being loved, held, and cradled by all the mothers in all the galaxies in all the previous history of the universe all at once. That's the best analogy I've been able to come up with.
That's beautiful. Tony, does that... Does this memory stay in your mind better than any dream or any other memory? I mean, does it stay alive?
It's every day. It is seared into my consciousness. There's no way anyone can ever forget anything like that.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is I've interviewed many people who've had near-death experiences and some that have had out-of-body experiences, and the level of memory is as if it just happened. And even if it's 70 years ago, it is clearer than anything that just happened yesterday.
It's more real than anything I've ever experienced here, by far.
Yeah, and that to me is just one of those signs that this is a really divine occurrence. I've never had one, but that is a commonality. And also that feeling of that unconditional love that can't be put into words.
No.
And the light. And, you know, I feel really grateful myself that you're sharing this.
Well, I was one of the speakers there at the International Association for Near-Death Studies, because we're trying to get this information out to help other veterans.
Yes.
So I met a captain that's active duty in the Navy back when I was there. She's a psychiatrist or psychologist or something. I can't remember which. She has done some studies, and I can't remember her name because it's a long, hard name to pronounce. She's from an India descent. Her first name is Mina, but I can't say her last name. It's too complicated to me.
That's okay.
She told me that the statistics that they have, that about 50% of veterans, combat veterans, are having these experiences. In the military, it's not accepted very well if you start talking about these kind of things. And so we, through IONS, and I got involved with the International Association of Near-Death Studies about 4 or 5 years ago when I first heard about them. I have since been working with Diane Corcoran, who was the former president of IONS, and she's a retired Army colonel and was a nurse in Vietnam. And that's what piqued her interest, was when the soldiers there were in their recovery room after surgery were telling her about their experiences. And she's been pushing to try for over 40 years to try and get something done about this so that the veterans or active duty military have the ability to freely speak about these kind of things, because it is outside the military box by far. You don't talk about it because you don't want to, when you're active duty, because you don't want to be labeled crazy. And I knew if I did, I would never be able to fly again. And I love being a flight engineer. So I clammed up. I just didn't talk about it. But that doesn't work either. And because I got angry, remember, at the chaplain or the pastor.
Of course.
And kind of got angry at God, too, because I wasn't given any answers. No words were spoken to me. It was just the energy of all of that. And then it was just over. And so I didn't even understand that for the first 10 or 15 years that I was experiencing grief as well, because I had lost the greatest love I'll ever know. And so it's been a very interesting ride. So what we did with the IONS community is created a video called Understanding Veterans Near-Death Experiences. And it's been very professionally done. It's about 36 minutes long. I just want to help the other veterans. And so myself, a couple other veterans, Shiloh Harris and Glenn, cannot remember Glenn's last name right now. And also a family member of a veteran that's passed already. She discusses, her name's Alma, how because her father was labeled as having psychological problems because of his spiritual experience, it had a very negative effect on his family over the decades, as did in mine when it ended up costing me a marriage. And I just had a lot of problems readapting to this place after having had a taste of perfection. It's really hard coming back here. The purpose of the video is to help other veterans and to train medical professionals, whether they're military, Veterans Administration, or civilians. It doesn't matter, because you don't have to be in the military to have a near-death experience.
Right.
And these type of problems are happening to everyone that have had a spiritual experience. If they don't understand what happened to them, it changes you forever. And so we're just trying to get this information out there to let people know there are other options, and there's a lot more information out there, and here's where you can come get the answers. And for the medical community, here's how to deal with it. Here's how to help these people talk about it. And so all we ever really needed was validation.
I want to thank Tony for sharing his story today, because so often we hear about these near-death experiences and people have amazing experiences and they come back with light and love and psychic abilities, but there's another side of it as well. When you get a taste of something that is so perfect, so beautiful, this feeling of unconditional love, and then you're transported back to Earth, it's like, wait a minute. I want to be back there. What happened? And there isn't a world that openly accepts it yet. Now, there's a great group called IANDS, IANDS.org, and it's the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And if you go to their website and you click on resources and educational training videos, you can find that video that Tony was talking about. It's ultra important for people to learn that near-death experiences and these mystical experiences are very real. And who knows what causes it? But they're real, they're important, and there is support. Grief is a bear. I was going to say something else, but I'm going to say a bear. When we lose something and we're back to reality, it makes us feel awful. I have a ton of free grief resources at wedontdie.com. You can get a free copy of my book by joining the Insiders Club. You can type coupon code FREE into the store where you see the We Don't Die audiobook. So I really want to thank you for listening to this, but I feel these two experiences from two great Navy people are really important so that you know we don't die. This is Sandra Champlain. You've been listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
And if you like this episode of Shades of the Afterlife, wait until you hear the next one. Thank you for listening to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.